Welcome to Context and Clarity. I am Chuck.
I am Karen.
I used to be a Democrat.
I used to be a Republican.
I am still a liberal.
I'm still a conservative, but since our parties left us, we're not really sure what we are. But we do know this. As Abraham Lincoln reminds us, we are not enemies. We are friends.
We are friends most of the time. Yes, we are.
We are.
And today we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, but we are going to shamelessly promote our other podcast.
Yes, that
we
our just brand put new out. One.
Yes, Spy mm-hmm. Stories. If you like the lives of spies, you'll like this.
Right. And if you like us, you might like it because we're the ones who do it. So there's that too.
Yeah. And you're in it a lot more than I am. So that's a bonus
I know.
For people.
I'm in it way too much. I would like for you to be in it more, but it's all right.
That's okay.
You just like to show up and be the talent. I understand how it is. You just like to show up at your own leisure.
I just come out of my trailer, sit at my microphone, and record.
Right.
Well, what are we going to talk about this week, Karen?
This week, we're going to start a series on America's history of special investigations. Guess you can probably guess why we're doing that.
I can. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, since we've recently changed the name of the show, we're also going to be changing the format a little bit too and throw in a couple of extra segments. And we're going to start one of those right now. So, Chuck, are you ready to play Fact or Fake?
I think I am, Karen. Well,
all right.
Well, hold on. I don't think I am Karen. I think I am ready to play.
Oh.
Clearly, I don't think I'm Karen.
All right.
I hate when you miss a good joke.
It's good. I get it.
Surely, I don't think I'm Karen. I'm not Shirley.
God, we just need to get through this.
Okay, go ahead. I think I am, Karen.
Well, so here's our meme. It's an image of Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller with text on it reading, Robert Mueller, good friends with James Comey, hires Obama and Clinton donors to investigate Trump administration and Russian collusion. What do you say, Chuck? Any facts or is it just false?
Well, I know that they hired Clinton donors. I know because that was in the news because Trump keeps saying the 13 Clinton supporters. On the referring to the lawyer. So I know that that's true. And I believe James Comey and Robert Mueller were on the same college basketball team. So I think that's true too.
Well, let's look at the first claim that Mueller and Comey are friends. The president claimed in a 2018 interview with the Daily Caller that he's Comey's best friend, not him, meaning Mueller. And he went on to say in the interview, and I could give you 100 pictures of him and Comey hugging and kissing each other.
Oh, I would not so want to that. See that. That's not something I want to see.
In order to prove a point, BuzzFeed News reporter Jason Leopold filed a FOIA act or a FOIA request asking for photographs of Mueller and Comey quote unquote hugging and kissing each other. Because remember, there's supposed to be over 100 of them. And, of course, the FBI said in response that its search did not turn up any records corresponding with Leopold's request.
So, hold on. What? Did Trump have, like, a binder full of pictures that he was claiming that he had Comey? And
I don't know.
I mean, what kind of... That in itself is weird.
I know. I read the transcript, and, I mean, he did say it, but he was being dramatic. But still, words matter. But
if you say, I could give you 100 pictures, that means you have 100 in your possession, which leads me to question your picture collection. Yes?
That's true.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, it does. Well, when the FBI released the official word that they could not find these pictures, Comey tweeted out that his wife was relieved to hear that. So that was kind of funny. So beyond the ridiculousness of what Trump had to say, there is a professional relationship between the two men, but not a personal friendship. When asked if they were friends in an interview, Comey replied, I admire the heck out of the man, but I don't know his phone number. I've never been to his house. I don't know his children's names. I think I had a meal with him once at a restaurant. I like him. I'm an associate of his who admires him greatly, but we're not friends in a social sense. So, the first part of the meme is, dun, 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 fake.
Fake. Now, so, they're like us. We have a professional relationship, but not a personal friendship.
I suppose. I mean, I don't know. What kind of relationship is it when you throw a ketchup bottle at someone?
It's not a friendly relationship, Karen. It's not a friendly relationship.
Well, let's move on to the second part. So last year, Trump tweeted out, why does the Mueller team have 13 hardened Democrats, some big crooked Hillary supporters, and zero Republicans? Then the special counsel's office revealed that 13 of the 17 members are indeed registered Democrats. None are registered Republicans, although one has been in the past. Only two gave any donations of significant amounts, and one of those actually donated heavily to Republicans as well as Democrats. So you are correct. It is a fact. However, it's important to remember context.
Well, one of the biggest things to remember is that Mueller himself is a registered Republican and probably wants to distance himself from any accusations of bias. Also, aren't there some Justice Department rules prohibiting taking political affiliation into account when filling career positions at the agency?
Yes, there are. And when those rules were not taken into account, like, for example, in Bush's DOJ, it can become a pretty big scandal. The other context that you have to consider is that research indicates that lawyers tend to lean left. One Oxford study that I looked at showed that 68% of lawyers who've made any political contributions have given more money to Democrats than to Republicans. When looking at lawyers who graduated from the top 14% of law schools, the number is even higher. 76% donated more to Democrats. So taking this into consideration, any employer therefore asking to hire the most qualified attorneys would probably end up hiring a liberal. Also, Ivanka and Jared have donated to Democrats, and so has Trump himself. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. So that's the context we need to take into consideration when looking at at Mueller's team. Now, rumors are circulating that Robert Mueller is finishing up his investigation into the Trump administration and collusion with Russia. And that got us thinking about investigations of other administrations. So we decided to delve a little into that. The official role of a special prosecutor was not defined until 1978. But that doesn't mean there weren't special prosecutors or investigations. There were many. And we decided to go revisit many of them.
First, we have the Whiskey Rebellion. And actually, that's what we used to call it when we let my brother drink whiskey, because there was always a rebellion. when Whiskey Joe came out, there was always a rebellion. But the real Whiskey Rebellion started in the 70s with Grant's first term in office. His new term was already scandal-ridden. It was scandalous, Karen.
Right. Well, we're talking about the 1800s, by the way, right?
Right. 1870s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything started with two of his associates, James Fisk and Jay Gould, and they illegally manipulated the stock market. This led to the Black Friday Panic of 1869. Former supporters of the president grew increasingly frustrated, and finally, a group in Missouri, broke away, which threatened Grant's chances for re-election. To deal with this, Grant sent one of his trusted allies, General John McDonald, to Missouri. Little known fact, Karen, do you know the anchor that I have on my wrist for my brother-in-law, who's in the Ohio Military Hall of Fame?
Okay, yep.
His name is John McDonald.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So anyway, he sent General John McDonald, a different one, obviously, to Missouri, to shore up support for the president. But McDonald, who was also supervisor of the U.S. Treasury Department's IRS for the St. Louis area, ended up in the very center of the whiskey ring, which started as a way to raise money for Grant. Operating out of St. Louis, Chicago, and Milwaukee, the ring extended to distillers, IRS agents, treasury clerks, and many others, all conspiring to siphon off liquor tax revenues into campaign coffers and also their eager hands in empty pockets. So these guys were pretty crooked.
Yes,
they were. By 1873, the ring wasn't even a political slush fund, but was considered just a purely criminal enterprise.
Right, yeah.
And one that ended up stealing an estimated $1.5 million a year from the Treasury. Now, things started changing when Grant appointed Benjamin Bristow as Treasury Secretary. So anyway, we get this McDonald guy going down there. He's going to straighten it up. And they just put him on the payroll. And he's right. Like, no, you guys are doing this all wrong.
Yeah.
You could make $1.5 million a year if you did it this way.
You can do it better. Right.
Anyway, Bristow made breaking up this whiskey ring his personal mission. He developed a group of undercover investigators and informants, and by 1875, had built a case against the ring that led to the arrest of more than 300 suspected ring members. The following month, Grant appointed John B. Henderson as a special prosecutor in this investigation. He hoped this would save his butt from going down with so many of his associates. Everyone around him was corrupt.
Right.
Haven't seen that one before. As Henderson and Bristow's investigators handed out indictments, the trail of evidence led them right into Grant's inner circle, including the president's personal aide and close friend, General Orville Babcock. That's an unfortunate name right there. Oh. That's like, come on, man. That's just when your parents hate you. Anyway, it was discovered that McDonald's sent Babcock.
You get a laugh every time.
I'm sorry. Pricey gifts to keep the White House from looking into the ring. After Grant was presented with coded telegrams proving his confident involvement, he affirmed that the investigation should continue no matter what came of it. But when the special prosecutor began implicating Grant himself, Grant was like, whoa, no. He decided to take right. matters into his own hands and fired the special prosecutor and replaced him.
Get this.
James Broadhead. He's just picturing like Frankenstein.
No, he replaced
Babcock.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, Babcock was actually somebody else, but it's funny. Anyway, go ahead.
When the time came for Babcock's trial, Grant gave a deposition proclaiming his friend's innocence. Now, because of Grant's testimony, the court later found Babcock innocent, making him the only major defendant in the Whiskey Ring scandal to win acquittal. Babcock tried to get his job back.
I know.
Bold that's move bold. There, Babcock.
I mean, that's bold.
He was trying to get back pay and everything else. But the public was not okay with that, and he was forced to resign. 10 days later, he was indicted for his alleged role in another scandal in the so-called safe burglary conspiracy. Of the 238 individuals indicted in the Whiskey Ring case, 110 were convicted, and more than $3 million of stolen tax revenues were recovered, Karen. That just seems like a shady business to me.
A little bit, yeah. Then we have the Star Route scandal. By the 1880s, most of the mail sent to the American West was transported by rail or steamship. The post office delivered mail to extreme rural areas through private contracts for horse and wagon transport. These contracts demanded that service on the routes be executed with certainty, celerity, and security. I think the way they just liked the way that sounded, because I do too. Certainty, celerity, and
alliteration,
security.
Alliteration, blah, blah, blah. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's not just alliteration. It rhymes. It's very nice. Okay. The words were used with such frequency that the three asterisks, or stars, often abbreviating them, gave the name Star Routes. In issuing these contracts, many corrupt officials within the Postal Department conspired with the delivery contractors to charge inflated prices and to establish unnecessary new routes. Or routes, depends on where you are. I say route. So, postal officials and the contractors split the illegally obtained profits. As suggestions of corruption began to circulate, The affair came to be referred to as the Star Root Scandal. Congress first launched investigations into this during the Hayes administration, but they turned up nothing. After President Garfield took office in 1881, he demanded further investigation of the Star Root Scandal. Special Agent P.J. Woodward headed up the new...
Is there any name we're going to cut? Okay, go ahead.
Headed up the new inquiry, and he found significant links to the corruption within both parties. One major offender was former Arkansas Senator Stephen W. Dorsey, who also happened to be Garfield's campaign manager. That's familiar. When Arthur took office following Garfield's assassination, he pledged to prosecute those responsible. Arthur had actually known about the illicit deeds for some time because he had worked closely with Dorsey. Nonetheless, he strongly supported the prosecution when the trials began, largely because it was a political necessity, which is what usually happens. Any failure to do so would have given Arthur's opponents the opportunity to criticize him. The trials were tedious and often inconclusive. The first trial ended with only two convictions, and a retrial produced none. A series of additional trials took place in smaller courts, but only two convictions resulted. The Cleveland administration later dropped all charges. The whole scandal proved to be a giant embarrassment. In fact, investigations show that the post office had been defrauded of $4 million. Think about at that time.
That's a lot of stamps, man.
You could say that's why stamps are so expensive now.
Well, then let's go to the Oregon fraud scandal. And really, you think of Oregon, you think of an honest kind of hippie-ish group of people.
But I think of the Oregon Trail game. That's what I think of. You have died from dysentery. In the early 1900s,
that was not really true.
That's what I think about. Your son has fallen from the wagon. Your oxen has fallen into the ditch. I mean, that's what I think about. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, it wasn't like today where they were all in little communes and had medical marijuana things. These were sketchy people in the 1900s. And they had frauds in Oregon and California. And they were based on the homestead laws, which allowed for the sale of public land to proven settlers. Unless you were one of the original settlers, then it didn't apply to you. But one such law was the Timber and Stone Act, which was supposed to provide settlers with timber and stone from land.
Shockingly enough, I mean, it is called the Timber and Stone Act. Yeah. So
I would have got that from you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for host-splaining that to me, Karen.
You're welcome.
Podsplainer.
It's my pleasure.
So anyway,
Podsplainer.
One such law was the Timber and Stone Act, which was supposed to provide settlers with timber and stone from lands neighboring their claims and offering land that wasn't suitable for farming for sale on tracts sized up to 160 acres at $2.50 an acre. That's a pretty good price.
Yeah.
The claims were that speculators filed fraudulent claims and bribed general land office officials to approve them. In some cases, even the names of the homesteaders were totally made up. One guy even came in with like Babcock on a thing, and it was like, Now, once the patents had been approved, they were sold to lumber and livestock companies for a profit. By this means, great tracts of valuable timber and grazing land were stolen from the American public. Under Teddy Roosevelt, agents of the Secret Service worked with prosecutor Francis Heine. Hey, lying, that's his real name. Come on, man. They worked with prosecutor Francis Heine to bring cases against fraudsters, including Oregon Senator John Mitchell and Representative John Williamson, who were convicted of their crimes. There was a later ruling that prosecutors had tampered with juries during the trial, and the Supreme Court eventually overturned Williams' conviction, and Mitchell, who had died, was pardoned posthumously.
Now, that seems kind of like a pointless gesture, don't you think?
The guy is dead. You want to unsully his name.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, Now we're at the Teapot Dome scandal, which is a really big deal. Before Watergate, it was this investigation that was considered the most sensational. In fact, it wasn't completely done away with until the Clinton administration. In 1920, the Navy requested that oil reserves at Teapot Dome, a teapot-shaped outcrop in Wyoming and another in California, be set aside in case of war or any other emergency. Remember, they had been converting coal-fueled ships into oil-powered ones since 1909. Under President Taft, Congress started setting aside federal land that contained these reserves. But things started to get a bit shady in 1920 when Warren Harding, a senator and Ohio newspaper publisher, won a long-shot run for the White House with the financial backing of oilmen excited at the prospect of oil-friendly cabinet members. Harding appointed Senator Albert Fall from New Mexico as Secretary of the Interior. Fall was known as a powerful, connected, poker-playing senator, a rancher, a lawyer, and a miner. It didn't take long for Fall to convince Harding that petroleum oversight should belong to the Department of Interior rather than the Navy. Of course it should. Of course it should. When the Secretary of the Interior says, you know, I think I should be in charge of the thing that's worth a lot of money, you should have me do that. Then, you know, it's a little shady.
Well, this whole thing seems sketchy to me.
It is. The ink wasn't even dry on the official transfer before Fall was secretly wheeling and dealing with his oil buddies. In 1922, with no competitive bidding or any public announcement at all, Fall leased exclusive drilling rights to the entire Teapot Dome site to the Mammoth Oil Company, owned by a longtime friend, Harry Sinclair, and California sites to his friend, Edward Doheny. Combined, the three sites were estimated to contain hundreds of millions of dollars worth of high-grade oil. Rumors began swirling of a shady deal, and investigations ensued.
Black gold. Texas tea. Yeah, there you go. And the first thing you know, old Ed's a millionaire.
So true.
All right, well, blackmail entered the picture. When Fall, with likely pressure from the president, paid off a newspaper publisher and other oil men who felt that they had been left out of the deal. Fall stepped down as interior secretary and resigned to his newly bought ranch.
Yeah.
But investigations raged on.
He's like, I'm just going to go and I'm just going to hang out on my ranch.
I'm going to go to this 160-acre ranch with a mansion on it for my, you know, little right. $10,000 a year salary.
Pay no attention to my mansion and everything on it. Right.
Swimming pools and movie stars.
Yep. Yep.
So many other members of Harding's cabinet, known as the Ohio Gang, were mired in various corruption scandals that just added to the fray. All the stress eventually got to President Harding, and he just died in 1923. Now, when Coolidge came in, with him at the helm, two special prosecutors, one a Democrat, one a Republican, were appointed to take over the Senate investigation into Fall's oil deals. Soon, the investigation would reveal that Fall received a $100,000 interest-free loan from oil man Doheny to purchase land for his enormous New Mexico ranch. Doheny admitted to the Senate that he arranged for his son, Ned, to deliver. How come every guy's got a bad son named Ned? Anyway,
I don't know if Ned was bad. He just had a son.
He delivered the cash in a black parcel bag directly to Fall. He was an accomplice. So further investigation.
Ned ends up in a bad situation. Ned ends up with a word that rhymes with his name. So show a little compassion.
Yeah, because this happened back in 1923. I imagine he would end up. It's been 106 years, yeah, he's dead.
It's obvious you come did not and sue read the me, script Ned. Before you started performing it. Anyway, keep going.
Well, further investigation showed that Sinclair delivered a large herd of livestock to Falls Ranch and had his company transfer some $300,000 in Liberty bonds and cash to Falls' son-in-law. While these were enormous sums in the 20s, the amounts were tiny compared to the hundreds of millions oilmen profited from oil leases in Wyoming and California. Now, during the trial, his son Ned was murdered. Ooh.
It's okay. Not funny, but that's why I was like, maybe be a little kinder to Ned.
Well, you know what? You got maybe Ned had it coming. But then maybe the friend committed suicide shortly after. The friend was afraid that he and Ned would be convicted due to their involvement with the black bag drop-off. Yeah, see, I told you that was a sketchy thing to do.
Yeah, it was.
Now, Dehaney ended up getting acquitted. Sinclair served 6 months in prison, and Vaughn ended up serving 9 months. Oh, for that kind of money, I'd spend my 9 months in prison. The Supreme Court ended up voiding suspicious oil leases in 27 and halted production at the two oil sites until new protocols allowed the reserves to be used for the war and energy crisis in the 70s. Under President Clinton, the sites were sold to the highest bidder and were again privatized.
So we don't know where they're at now, but it might be sketchy again. Well, as you can see, special investigations and rampant corruption is nothing new. It's plagued many a president, and usually for a good reason. So perhaps what we're seeing now is not actually a witch hunt of epic proportions, but is actually par for the course. Now, next week, we're going to get into Watergate and Iran-Contra and Whitewater. So that'll be fun.
So that means it will be fun. It's going to be a blast. Watergate and Iran-Contra were just a hoot. I mean, they were a good time. So that means that for now, that is not all we have to say about that.
We want to thank everyone who takes the time to listen to us. You can find us on all the main podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter at Clarity Context and on Facebook at Context and Clarity Podcast. And we'd love for you to join our Facebook group, which is Context and Clarity Podcast Group on Facebook.
That's right. And if you like the show, we would appreciate a positive review on Facebook or iTunes especially. And if you really like the show and want to support it, you can find us at Patreon as Context and Clarity. And we would like to take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters. Your support means the world to us.
It really does. And it allows me access to so many wonderful publications. So thank you.
Yes.
Make this research.
Because researching these things is not easy.
Right.
I mean, you have to go down rabbit holes. I was down one on this script here for.
And to get original sources, it's really, you have to dig really hard. And there's numerous subscriptions that I do every month to try to be able to get you really accurate information. So we really do appreciate the support. It means a lot.
It does mean a lot. And I can't believe you didn't call me on that. I didn't do anything on this story.
That's okay. That's okay.
But it's a wonderful story.
I figured it would be more fun to just hear you react as you went along. So,
oh, okay.
And it was.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
Bye.